First Peter chapter 3. One of the first two words that you see there in chapter 3 is likewise. So he's hearkening back to something that he's said already. You remember, going back to the previous chapter, verse 13, that Christians are to be submissive to the governing bodies. Verse 18, servants are to be submissive to their masters. Christians even are to be submissive, right? We've got verse 25, to the overseer and shepherd of your soul. So he's talked about this idea of submitting to one another and submitting to one who has charge over you. He turns his attention now to the idea of wives submitting to the leadership of their husbands. Now this, I mean, let's just be honest, this is not something that society likes to talk about as much. This is not something that the world is crazy about. God's ideas are unchanging, right? God himself is unchanging. Malachi 3, verse 6, for I am the Lord, I do not change. Jesus is unchanging. We see that in Hebrews 13, verse 8. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, tomorrow, and forever. The pattern that God established for the home was for husbands to be men and lead, and for their wives to submit to them and strengthen them and help them and all of the things that went with that family. Obviously, God expects husbands to not be tyrants. He expects them to rule the family as one who's understanding of the needs of his wives. We're going to see that in verse 7, more about that. This is the order that God has taken place, or that God has set into place. Let's think about it. What if it goes this way? First of all, what if husbands lead with courage? What if they trust in God and they consider the needs of their wives, they consider the needs of their children, and they lead with that in mind? Number one, what if that happens? And then number two, going with it, what if wives submit to their husband's leadership and they provide all of the things, all the heart of the family that the wife needs to, and they encourage and strengthen their husband in his leadership? What happens? What kind of family do you have when number one and number two take place? The husband is the leader, the courageous, godly leader he should be. The wife is the godly woman, the heart of that house, supporting and strengthening her husband. What do you have? Man, that is good stuff. That home will be a good place to live, right? It'll be a good place to raise children. It absolutely will. It'll be a home that glorifies God, most importantly. And those other two go with that point. It will be a place where God is welcome and His will is glorified. Now let's go back and think. What if number one and number two are not happening? Then what happens to the home?
Satan involved in it.
And it won't be any of those things, right? It will have problems in all of those realms. What if either the husband, take either one, what if either one of them fail to keep their responsibility? What if the husband's inconsiderate? Never considers the thoughts of his wife. He is a tyrant. He just does whatever he wants to do. What happens in the home? Ask Nabal and Abigail what that house is like. What if the wife is rebellious to her husband's authority, just does whatever she wants? What do you have then?
Hosea.
Yeah. Now you could. Yeah, there's a lack of unity. You could. Ahab and Jezebel. You've got that situation. Granted, Ahab had his own problems. We know that. But think about what happens and how that gets passed on. You remember who Athaliah's parents were, right? Ahab and Jezebel. You remember Athaliah, the one who usurped the throne of Judah and all of the wicked things that she did. She learned that stuff. She had an example of that kind of chaos growing up, and certainly she put it into play. But when you have a husband and wife who respect God and each other, the family will be blessed. And it is the home that God wants. Now, as we go into this, let's read verses 1 and 2. I want to make some comments on it. And then after we finish 2, we'll throw it out there for you guys to make some comments. Verse 1, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. This is huge. These first two verses, and just to try to think of what Peter may have had in mind, may have very well been the case here that you've got, well, obviously it was the case, you've got Christian women who weren't married to Christian husbands, right? Married to husbands who may have been pagans or whatever the case was. Was she expected to honor the leadership of her husband, even if he was a pagan? Yeah. And now an additional point comes up with it. When she does that, when she gives him that honor and respect as her husband, what can happen because of that? Absolutely. That example can cause him to come to the Lord. That's huge, isn't it? I mean, just think of that influence constantly that she's exerting on her husband. Isn't this Matthew 5:16 in practice? I mean, isn't really Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven? Isn't that what this is on a home, personal basis between the two of them? He sees her actions day in and day out. He sees that they're legitimate, that she is true to these things, and he's transformed by them. Now, do husbands closely watch the behavior of their wives? We do. Now imagine this case. You've got someone who is either just doesn't care, or maybe he's an idol worshiper. He's married to a woman who's become a Christian. Is he watching her life? Is he watching the things that she says, listening to them and seeing? Because she's claiming to be something, right? She's claiming to be a child of God. And he's going to watch to see. And he may very well be watching for what reason? See if she's a hypocrite. Yeah. Because, yeah, you talk a good game, baby. But when it comes down to it, you're no different than I am. So I'm not going to change my life at all, because basically you just put on a show. And there may have been some husbands that hoped that they could find that, so they could say, hypocrisy. But what if he looked at her and he saw that she was legit? He saw a woman whose life had been transformed by the blood of Christ. She was pure and she was holy and she did put God first in everything and she did love and honor her husband. Could that affect this pagan soul? Could that bring him to the Lord? Peter's telling him it's huge. It very well could do that. Go ahead, Bobby.
Do you think about this time Nero was calling a Christian to suffer? And a lot of times when people are suffering at the hands of high-ups, they seem to kind of want to take it out on somebody else. And that might have been one of the reasons that Peter was addressing their wives and their husbands.
All of that could go together. I mean, it very, very well could be the way the pressures that they had from society and dealing with, especially with him, bringing that stuff home and that affecting their personal lives. There's no reason to think that sort of thing wasn't going on. Yeah, Sasha.
And obviously that doesn't always happen like in these verses suggest, but whenever I read these, I think of my great-grandfather. And we called him Buddy. And then my great-grandmother, Granny. Well, Granny was a faithful Christian from when she was in her teens until when she passed away, when she was in her 70s. Well, Buddy lived by himself after that. He saw her example his whole life, but he wanted nothing really to do with the church or with God. It was more like, that's good for you, but he was more into evolution and things like that. He wanted to be learned. After she passed away, he had the example of my grandmother and my aunt. And when he got where he couldn't live on his own, he took turns staying a few weeks with either one of them, so he had their examples. And at the age of 95, he became a Christian. After all those years of all those examples, it took him a while. But those examples, I'm certain that was the reason for his becoming a Christian. That he saw that all those years and saw the consistency.
Yeah.
And he knew that there was something different.
Yeah. And think about it. I mentioned, imagine what Athaliah saw in the household of Ahab and Jezebel. That got passed on, right? Well, now take the flip side of that. And here you have someone who doesn't believe, and he sees an example of godliness, but it's not just one generation. It gets passed on to the next generation. And I remember Buddy talking about when he looked at the family of his children and grandchildren who were faithful Christians, when he looked at their families, they had their stuff together, he said. He said, you know, they have problems like everybody else, but they deal with it. And the relationships between them and their children is just so much different from my grandchildren and great-grandchildren who aren't members of the Lord's church. It was obvious to this man He cared most about science and things like that. He's very interested in that stuff. But he couldn't deny the fact when it was in front of him, this consistent example of godliness. 95, it changes him and moves him to act on it. It's a great example of the sort of thing we're talking about here. Steve?
This example of husband and wives, because their relationship is closer and more continuous and is there all the time. The Christian's life is supposed to be, we're supposed to live our lives so that our yeas will be yea or nays nay. Mm-hmm. So we can set the same example just to people that we come in contact with.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's put 3 and 4 with it. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of the Lord. Now, obviously, you can use these verses to deal with modesty, and I have, and many others have. I want to keep them in the context of what's being talked about right here, though. Let's keep it in the discussion. Women will win others to Christ through their behavior, right? Through the content of their hearts. It won't be the clothes that they wear. It won't be the jewelry that they... It's not going to be the accessories that bring people to the Lord. What is a woman going to have that leads people to Christ?
Inner beauty.
Yeah, that inner beauty. That's a great description of it. Character, right? And Matthew's used the phrase, her integrity. Those are the things that will draw people to the Lord. This stuff, anybody can have the stuff. Anybody can have the nice clothes and all of that. That is no reflection on... It doesn't reflect back on the goodness and the holiness of God. But her actions do. She may not have flashy clothes. She may not own any. But she does have the white robes of a saint. That's a big deal. Because that's going to be shown in every action that she gives. And it is a teaching tool. So the focus here is on the heart. Look at verse 4 again. A gentle and quiet spirit is beautiful and precious in the sight of God. When others see you, would they consider you to be gentle and meek? It's just something for us to think about. They should. When others see and hear you, would they consider you to have a tranquil and quiet spirit? They should. This makes God happy. He is pleased with these things. Meekness is not a sign of weakness. It's not. The world teaches us that it is. It is absolutely not. It's a sign of strength. We see it in Moses. We can think of other examples. But it is powerful to get to see that. And who did, according to verse 5, who showed this character, this tranquil and quiet spirit that they could think back to?
Sarah.
Yeah, those holy women of the past, these women they would have looked back to. And Sarah is the one specifically given in verse 6. For in this manner, in the former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves. In what manner? They adorned themselves how?
Through
their submissiveness, through their tranquil and peaceful inner spirit, as Donna said. Being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. This idea about her calling him Lord, I think it's taken from Genesis 18:12. There is where it comes from. Did she obey her husband? Did she honor him as her head? She did. And what is she able to face in doing that? That's something that God is pleased with. What was she able to face? End of verse 6. What does she have to be afraid of? Nothing at all. Nothing at all. This is pleasing to the Lord, and she can trust in that. This is the character that defined women of the past. Now let me make a point here. For the wives here, would you like your husband to be stronger? Would you like him to be more faithful? Holier? Closer to the Lord? Okay. I would assume the answer is yes, right? That's what you want. I'm gonna tell you a secret. Here's how you do it. It's way easier than we may think. Do husbands want good cooking? Yes. Yes. Do husbands want physical affection? Yes. You know what they want more than that? More than any of those things. They want to be respected and seen as being respectable by their wives especially. I'm going to tell you, this is the honest truth. If you want to see your husband go from here to here, honor him and let him know that you have his back and that you have full confidence in his ability to lead as God expects him to. Because when he knows that you are with him, and you have that kind of confidence and trust in him, you will see his confidence soar. He will make hard decisions and do it with the confidence that he knows she is with me in this. I am telling you, it will change so much. It gives us ground and strength to stand on. It does. I am telling you from a man's perspective, it is really, really important. And I think it gets overlooked a lot of times. I'll catch you in just a second, Bobby. Let me put one more point with that and then we'll get your comment. Now, on the other hand, would you like for your husband to be weak and worthless and pathetic? Because you can do that too. This is all you have to do. If you want him to be absolutely worthless, this is all you have to do. Undermine him constantly. Show him that you have no confidence in his decision making and make fun of him in front of other people. Make fun of his ability to make decisions. You want to make a miserable, angry, ruined man who will make your life miserable, do that to him. Show him no respect whatsoever and undermine him at every chance, and you will absolutely destroy your husband. So those are the two sides of it. This is big. You watch TV and you see the relationship on TV, and I'm about ready to be done with TV. But you see the relationship between husbands and wives, and it's this constant undermining. You will ruin it. You will ruin each other. And we'll talk more about that from the husband's perspective when we get to verse 7. But these things are simple points that God has given us in His Word, and they work. They will make our marriage better if we'll just listen and put them into practice. Bobby, go ahead.
I was thinking about Saul's daughter, the one that he gave to David.
Michael.
She said something that didn't make David feel too good when she saw him dancing before the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
She said he was just acting like one of the vain fellows.
Yeah. How did that relationship go from then on out? Do you remember?
Man.
Yeah, what a mess. That was just, it was just awful from that point on out. And no children came through that either. Let's look at it from the other perspective. Look at verse 7. Let me stop. Any comments? Any other points you want to bring up on that? I don't think that gets talked about a lot. It's huge. It's huge, and we see it also in Ephesians chapter 5. Go with verse 7. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Man, that is a big verse. There's a lot to consider in there. We have a responsibility as husbands to live with our wives with understanding and to honor them. There's a couple things that go into that. They don't think the same way we do. Right? I know that's a newsflash for everybody in here. But and you know it's true. Right? We think differently. The funniest thing in the world to me is when Sasha comes up with a sermon idea and she gives it to me. And she'll give me a couple points to go with it. And she's like, do you think you could use this? And I see it and I'm like, yeah, this is gold. And I take it and 3 days later I say, baby, look over this. And she's like, well, that's good, but that is not at all where I was going with that. And it happens every single time. Every time. They're both true. I mean, right? I mean, we're both bringing out true points. But when she gives me the topic, my mind starts going. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is good. We go. And I'm the opposite direction of where she's going with because we're different. God made us different. And that's okay. That's not only okay. That's good. It's good. When you got those two sides, it makes a family strong. But what are we to do? Live with her how?
According to knowledge.
Yeah, according to knowledge, with understanding, some of the verses say. I am afraid some men don't even try. They honestly don't even try. They just kind of throw up their hands and say, women are so weird, and just walk away without making any effort at all to do this. My marriage will suffer if I don't dwell with understanding. It will. It will never be what it's supposed to. The communication won't be good. All of these things won't be what they should. Look at that next phrase. Giving honor to your wife. And I know it says afterward there, as to the weaker vessel. And the women of the world don't like that statement. But God used it. So let's talk about what it means here. Some of you may know Gene Taylor. He preaches in Tallahassee, Florida. He did for a long time as an elder there. I think he's still there. And he was preaching a lesson. It was a weekend series on the family. And he was talking about the husband and wife's relationship. And he went to this verse and said, men are like that clunky old coffee cup. You know the one I'm talking about. It weighs about 5 pounds. And that thing, you could throw it through a wall and the coffee cup would be fine. They're just kind of rough and rugged. Women are like fine china. They are precious. And they are to be cherished by their husbands. And that description has always stuck in my mind. That's not an insult, by the way. The world would just go, oh, how could you say such a thing? It's not an insult. Women are to be cherished by their husbands. They are precious. Now, let's think about this. And keeping in mind here, I think there may be an allusion to the fact you have Christian women married to pagan men. By and large, men are often bigger and stronger, right? I mean, typically. It's just the way that, I know not every single time, but typically they are bigger and stronger. Especially among the pagans who may not have respected marriage very much, there would have been a temptation that when he wanted his way to just do what? Just use his strength and do whatever he wanted to do. Treat her with honor. Treat her with respect. And I'm thinking about the fact that Peter, as he's writing to Christian men, husbands, do you treat your wives with honor? Because he's saying here, and I love what he puts at the end of this verse, don't you dare mistreat her in any way. This certainly, would it include physical abuse? Absolutely, it would, but it's not limited to that. Can I emotionally abuse my wife? You know, can I mentally and intellectually abuse her? Can I spiritually abuse her? I can. Somebody calls and wants to talk to me, and Sasha tells me, hey, oh, it's so-and-so, and I say, oh, tell him I'm not here. What did I just put her in a position to do for me? Life for me. I am spiritually abusing her. Because you go back to chapter 5 of Ephesians. How did Christ present his bride, the church? Pure, without a spot, without spot or blemish. Do I treat my wife like that? Do I not dare put her in a position that would ever cause her to violate her conscience? To even come close to ground that might be sinful? Do I treat her like that? Because that's what Peter is saying here. Certainly, the physical treatment, all of that is contained in this. She is a Christian, and so she's an heir of God just like you. Mistreat her, and what happens? God won't listen to you. I mean, you let that sink in. You mistreat your wife in any of these ways, the God of heaven does not care what you have to say. That's a big deal, right? My treatment of somebody else can completely sever my link to my Heavenly Father. That's big, and I need to get that. And certainly, Peter intended for husbands to get it here. So here, and make a couple more points, and then we'll put it out there for you guys to comment. Many husbands may not physically abuse their wives, but they can do it in other ways. We talked about the wife undercutting the husband. Do you belittle your wife? And I'm not talking about pestering each and just joking with each other. I mean, people pick, and that's one thing. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean belittling your wife, especially in front of others. I know a man who called his wife Crowface. How do you think that worked out? How in the world? Can you imagine? That's what was heard in public. Can you imagine what it's like behind closed doors? What do you think that relationship was like? What do you think it was like? Absolute chaos. I'll give you one guess. Do you think they're still married? No. Don't belittle your wife. And here's, I guess here's the question for me, and I need to be better at this. Does my wife know I cherish her? Does she know? Does she know? Do other people know that I cherish my wife? That is what Peter is telling these husbands. She's worthy of that. She's worthy of that honor to be cherished. Do this. And here's the thing. It's not like you're going out of the way to do it. Your life's going to be better when you do. It benefits everybody in the house. And it benefits everybody around you. Benefits young couples who look at you. As an example, do you think young married couples and people thinking about getting married look at older Christian couples to see what it ought to look like? What kind of example am I giving them? This needs to be here. This cherishing. Sasha has told me before we were talking about this, when this happens, when the wife feels cherished by her husband, it brings a feeling of safety and strength to her. And it gives her confidence to do what she needs to do. And doesn't that sound familiar with what we just talked about with the husband? When that kind of respect is there, both of them get lifted up. So what happens to the family? Stronger. Yeah, the kids see the example they need to. You know, when you are in a stable environment, the kids are better. Their spiritual growth happens. What does it do for the local church? You've got a rock. And there, this, it affects everybody. This is huge. And certainly important for us to see. Okay, I'm going to stop. Any comments you guys want to bring up on any of those first seven there? Yeah, Matthew.
Yeah, I was going to kind of point out the hypocrisy of the world, because if you made a comment in such that husbands should care and cherish and submit to their wives, not in the sense of leadership, but should be willing to do things for them,
gotcha,
take care of them, mm-hmm, just as Jesus submitted to the Father and gave his life for the church, any woman would tell you, oh yeah, that's right, absolutely. But then when you reverse it, you say a woman should submit to her husband and cherish and love him and respect him, and then suddenly it's kind of like, whoa. Well, you're an uncle bragger. You're some kind of uninvolved individual. And it's kind of, as a funny thought to it, as much as the world tells us that women are understandable, the verse specifically says dwell with understanding, so men can understand the mind of women.
They can.
Yeah.
But it takes what?
Effort.
It takes effort. It does. And it's not a one-time thing. You go, baby, I remember distinctly on our 5th anniversary, I dwelled with you with understanding. I remember, I did. Don't you remember? I mean, this is an ongoing thing. And quite frankly, it takes practice. Because we tend to be selfish sometimes and think about our own things. Tim, you had some.
Like so many other things, if we didn't grow up with good examples, even though we have this intense desire to do the right thing, if it was not modeled for us, it's not going to come naturally. And we need those examples. We need to be around those good examples. We need to initiate those relationships in order to learn. Otherwise, we're going to pass that on to the next generation.
Yeah.
Besides failings in our own.
I am afraid that many fathers teach their sons how to throw spirals and how to throw curveballs and how to hit well, and they do not teach their sons how to treat a woman. And that's a failing. And it's a failing that's going to get passed on. Now, now what do we do about it? I can't control what everybody else does, right? But I can control what I do. I can't control what goes on in my house. So, how do we teach those who may not have grown up with that example? What do we do as Christians in this local body to do that? Okay, let's be. They can see it on Sunday a little bit, maybe, right? Maybe if you put your arm around your wife in the pew. I mean, honestly, there's not a whole lot going. That is not a sign to take your arm away from your wife's shoulder. I'm saying it's very limited what you can see, right? How are you going to learn that? Really learn it?
Everything. Observance from day to day.
Day to day observance, which means, and I think Simona's the one who said it, we need to be together. And older Christians, I hope you will develop relationships with younger Christian couples and just build them up. Strengthen them. And younger Christians, I hope that you will take advantage of those. When somebody offers to spend time with you, when somebody asks you about things going on in your family, don't take it personally. They want you to be better. They want you to avoid some of the missteps that they made 15, 20 years ago. They love you. They love your family. So can we make this better? Can we put that good example out there? We absolutely can, but we've got to do it. Yeah, we've got to make the effort to do it. It will not happen accidentally or by magic. It's going to have to take effort on both parts there. Good. Okay, anything else on verse 7? I'll bring it up. Yeah, Norris.
We do in this world, we do see a decline in marriage because it seems to be something negative to people because, you know, the people don't have a commitment no more. You know, a lot of times you get people say they want to marry somebody that has the same, you know, type of hobbies they have and stuff like that. You know, that's not no guarantee that somebody going to stay together. But you got to think that whatever we don't have in common, we try to do to try to make it work. And people just ain't willing to do that no more.
I think there's a direct connection with the fact that people aren't willing to sacrifice what they want anymore. People wouldn't dare put the needs of others above themselves. And I think that's what causes a lot of problems. And not in, only in marriage, but in every relationship we have. If I demand getting my way and for you to put me first, and I never consider putting you first, what's that relationship going to be like? It's not going to be good. It's going to constantly be in turmoil. So we see it in the marriage especially. Good. Thoughts on that? Yeah, Bob.
I knew a man one time. He said he told his wife he loved her when they got married, and said if that changed, he'd let her know.
They had an excellent communication line.
That's not love and word.
Yeah, you know. And to be fair, I can tell my wife I love her every morning, and she never knows it. Because of the lack of action on my part. I mean, those really can just be words that are completely empty. So this is a constant effort and thing. Linda, go ahead.
What people need to remember is that verbal abuse and put downs is no different than somebody physically throwing a punch.
Oh, it's
the effect is the same. It's worse. It leaves a mark that will never go away.
It can break someone. You know, that old, what's the old saying? Yeah, the sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I don't know who the moron was who came up with that. And no clue what he was talking about. That is just the dumbest thing. Can you hurt people with your words? There are times, I just think back, I would rather somebody have punched me in the face than to have said to me what they said, because it hurt a lot longer, right? And it cut a lot deeper. The bruise will go away, but that stuff stays in the heart. And if it's not changed, it can fester. And then now it's producing its own poison. It's a mess. Those things cut deep. And this is, I need to measure my words around my wife. Right? Because you ever get frustrated? You're impatient and everything today has gone wrong and I'm aggravated. And then she comes up asking a simple question. What is the knee-jerk reaction? Just snap. Right? She's the one there. And why we do it to the ones we love the most is just beyond me. But they often bear the brunt of our anger and frustration. And I can say something that just completely cuts through her. And now what does she do? She's the only one that didn't make things wrong that day. And yet, that's who we pour it out on. We got to be careful. There are times we just don't even need to open our mouths. If I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to control what comes out, maybe I just need to practice not talking for a while until I've got that back under control. Because those things, it's hard to take back some of them. Okay, let's look at... Oh, yeah, Matthew, go ahead. Then we'll skip you.
You know, when we were talking about the things that younger people see, and I remember growing up, two things I could always observe growing up. I mean, I wasn't raised in a Christian household. I didn't really see that with my father so much, but mom was always pretty good. One thing that a woman can do to a man that I always saw and I knew, I could just take it right off the bat that she had no respect, with rolling eyes. It's one of those things, you see them say something and they roll the eyes and I instantly knew. She doesn't care what he said, nor is she going to do as he said because she doesn't care. The other thing is when a man talks to his friends and refers to his wife as a burden. Ball and chain, the old fill in the phrase that you use. That was another thing. And it's kind of, as a single individual who looks forward to marriage, every person should look at their spouse and see what a privilege that the Lord has blessed them with. Because as somebody who's single, I can see, yeah, it's nice to be by yourself sometimes, but it's always better to have another one by your side. And three, Psalm said, it's always better to her, Proverbs, it's always better to have two, so someone's there to help lift you up. And that's a spouse should be the closest one. So to treat them with the disrespect or to treat them like a burden, it's sad for the privilege and the blessing that you have. And that's what they should be considered.
It is, and ironically, things are said a lot of times to hurt the other one. They end up cutting you and hurting you so much more because you ruin that relationship. So all the good that could have come and should have come from it, it's not, because I've gotten in the way of that with whatever my comments or my uncontrolled anger or whatever it may be. Okay, let's look at two more verses real quick. Let's put 8 and 9 together, and then we'll close for class tonight. Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers. We've seen that before in this epistle. Be tender-hearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. And we may spend some more time on this Sunday night. I've got four behaviors mentioned here specifically in verse 8, and they're all Christians should be united in this. This should define us as God's people, just these general traits. Be compassionate towards one another. What does that mean?
Sympathetic.
Okay. Yeah, sympathetic. Actually care. You know, when you look in Romans 12, and we are rejoicing when our brethren rejoice, and then we're weeping when our brethren are weeping, that's for real. That's not just a, man, sorry about that, hate that happened. It bothers me, the hardship that you're going through. It hurts me. I think about it when I'm not around you because I truly care about you. That's the idea that's talking about there. And then at the same time, when good things happen to you, what does it do for me as your brother? I'm thrilled. I'm not jealous. I'm thrilled. If my heart's what it should be, obviously, I will be ecstatic for what you're going through and the good fortune that you've had. That's one way I think we can measure the content of our heart. When good things happen to brethren, what's my first reaction? Am I thrilled or am I jealous? That'll tell me a lot about me, and it's just kind of an honest assessment there. Tim.
The husband, if he is supposed to be emulating the role that Christ plays towards the church, you see in the Gospels over and over and over, the initial description of Jesus is he had compassion on people. Over and over again, he groaned in his spirit. You know, that care, that initiating, that causes him to initiate love. As a husband, if that's not there, if you look in the mirror and the way you act towards your wife and your family is not one of these bowels of mercy, that you are caring how their day is going, that you're never going to sacrifice. You're never going to take on that role because we're too selfish. We're not caring about somebody else.
We'll stop there. We'll pick up on that Sunday. I know we'll have more to talk about with it. Thank you, guys.